Good afternoon and welcome to this week's Gnostic Radio Program of Adelaide. You're listening on PBA FM 89.7. It's just after four and you're here with myself, Diana Azam, Armando Arias, and joining us via telephone is Mr. Trent McHugh. Hello, Trent. Are you there? Hello, Trent.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So although Trent joins us from Auckland, New Zealand, he's originally from Parra Hills, Adelaide. So it's nice to have an ex-local on our community radio program.
I'm an expat now. So.
Yes, I'm an expat. Yes. All right. So Trent is going, is joining us today to help us to better understand this topic of Gnostic anthropology. So hopefully we all know by now what Gnosis is, and if we don't, then we can keep listening and find out more. Trent, could you start by telling us what the word anthropology itself actually means?
Well, anthropology, so anthropos is man, and ology is obviously the study of, so anthropology is a study of man. Historically, anthropology basically comes from 18th, 19th century, where it studies people from social context, political context, biological, cultural. So it's basically a very broad study as to what makes us us. So what gives rise to certain ways of thinking, certain ways of behaving? Why are some cultures in India, for example, different to people in China, different to different cultures in Europe, Africa, etc.? So basically studies people from the point of view of we're shaped by our environment. We're shaped by our history. We're shaped by the stories that define a culture. And we're shaped by the values that make us who we are. So that's kind of how anthropology is seen in a modern context as a person might study at university. Whereas Gnostic anthropology also sees that we are shaped by our environment, we're shaped by our values, and we're shaped by the stories and the cultural, I guess, lineage that defines us, but in a different context, in that we're born of our internal life. So Gnostic anthropology basically studies the spiritual influences that define humanity. So as we understand, Master Samael was somebody who explored what Gnostic anthropology is in the context of the stones of the pyramids of Egypt, European culture through Aztec America, and basically showed how there's elements in each one of these cultures that are of a spiritual type that have allowed cultures to flourish, have allowed spiritual cultures to flourish. So a lot of the mythologies that, I guess, give rise to religions around the world come from a common basis. So, and that's basically the spiritual foundations of humanity, which is what Gnostic anthropology is concerned with.
And that seems to be a very big task to be able to link all of those different traditions and histories into the teaching that we know in Gnosticism.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that is, I guess, a great strength in terms of the Gnostic studies, because it is so broad. We can look at the spiritual heritage of India. We can look at the spiritual heritage of Indigenous Australia. We can look at the spiritual heritage of the Aztecs or the Mayans and see the same principles and the same processes and see how that's, given rise to an ethical culture within that, within those people. And then also understand how that relates to us as well. So in a sense, rather than separating people from one country to another or from one time to another, we actually look at what unites us. And what unites us is basically our spiritual heritage, which I guess in these times, especially in the modern age, we've become quite disconnected from our spiritual heritage. And as any people who have experienced things like colonialism, once that lineage is cut, it has a pretty serious impact on the generations that follow. So effectively, if we want to have some common connection with the rest of humanity. We have to really work to regain our spiritual heritage, and that's really where exploring Gnostic anthropology allows us to do that in a very individual way.
Okay. So could you talk a bit about what are some of the common theories of how we as a as man or as a society have developed?
Yeah, so today there's a very strong movement towards of Darwinism. So Darwin basically he doesn't necessarily lay claim to the development of humanity as a whole. It's really the schools that followed from him, that there's a development of humanity from a very basic structure into a more complicated one. So that's essentially how Darwinism works. So the idea of human beings coming from apes, or ultimately coming from fish in the sea that are then evolved into another creature and then evolved into apes and then evolved into human beings today. So that's essentially one line of thought around that. Of course, we have the others as well, which is of a creator god that is somebody who's stepped into the universe and created the world in that way. The Gnostic view of how we came into being is through a process of emanation. And emanation, I guess, in some ways, has common threads with a Darwin view of there is an evolving or developing of energies and forces. At the same time, it also shares some similarities with the creation view in that there's an intelligent force that allowed that to happen. So with the Gnostic view, it sees that everything emanates from a central point, which is the absolute, which is spiritual consciousness. So as that force unfolds from itself through life, it begins to develop certain emotions, certain experiences, all the arts and sciences, for example, stem from that state of consciousness. So rather than seeing the development of humanity from matter up, it actually sees it from the other way, which is that we stem from a high state of consciousness, and then that understanding or that vision of consciousness tries to express itself in a world that is a material world. So it has common elements between those different fields, Darwinism and creationism, but actually sees it from a different perspective. Gnostic anthropology essentially sees that the most defining thing for a person is our state of consciousness rather than how we are a matter.
Okay. That's fascinating. So it's a descent, as in from a higher plane. We've descended or we've become heavier, denser vibrations into, the people, the physical vehicles we are now, but ideally going back to that original point of departure, that original consciousness is the anthropology that of the the Gnostics. Is that a good sort of summary?
Yeah, and that path back is what's been explained in different religions and traditions around the world, and that's the heritage that's been left. In a way, sometimes people might think, well, I don't really understand how we can go from a state of consciousness into a world of matter, but I always use the example of it's like if you have an idea as to how you might want to draw something on a piece of paper and you've got a perfect vision in your mind as to how this might look, but as soon as you start trying to move your hands and fingers and trying to move the pencil around the piece of paper, suddenly what you're expressing in matter is not the same as the vision that you have inside your mind. So as the vision begins to condense itself into matter, it loses something of its original vision. So if you look at that from a higher point of view, if you have a higher state of consciousness and that tries to express in the world of matter, it begins to lose something of itself. So around the world, like in terms of different cultures, they explained that there is a state of consciousness that is in itself perfect, pure, joyful, free, and there is actually a path inside ourselves to be able to go back to that. And then that's explained through all the different myths and legends that basically indicate how we do the work on ourselves in order to get back to that primordial state.
Okay, so each of us has a spiritual heritage, and it's a matter of finding out what that is or how to connect with that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's interesting in the modern age because Carl Jung was probably a more recent person who saw that and understood that and tried to explain how psychologically what we have inside of us are archetypes. And he actually used that term spiritual heritage. He was saying we need to reclaim our spiritual heritage because we don't have a relationship with our internal states, and that's what's creating a lot of the psychological problems and the psychological issues. Going beyond Jung, obviously we have someone such as Master Samuel who actually understood through his own direct experience what Jung was kind of indicating, which is that if we don't actually know how to relate to our own being, if we don't have a relationship with our Divine Mother, if we don't have a relationship with our own consciousness in any way, then we fall into a state where we're defined by the external world instead, which is essentially what materialism is. Materialism is basically when we forget ourselves and we're identified by the world that surrounds us, which is where we fall into what's referred to as materialistic anthropology. So materialistic anthropology is basically we are shaped by the family, by the community, my education, everything that comes to me via the senses is what determines who I am. So, which is, it's something that people still very much hold on to today in a lot of ways, that if we have perfect food, if we have a perfect house, if we have the perfect life, then we should be producing perfect people. And, you know, historically there's been different groups that have come out and tried to do just that. You know, we create a perfect world and then perfect people will come out of that. Unfortunately, you know, that's clearly not the case. As Master Samuel explains, it's what we actually carry inside of us that determines who we are. It's not what we bring in from outside necessarily.
It's interesting. You make me think about the fact of in how cells divide, and when they divide, there is that error. There's an mechanism of error, and the cell can also heal some of that too. So in the design, you could say, or how the cell operates, there is no perfectionism. There is even, notably imperfection that is then tried to be repaired, well, the DNA repair mechanism. So that's quite an interesting point.
Yeah. That's exactly. And the thing that really characterizes a person's ability to thrive in the world is their ability for resilience, the capacity to rise above and to transform their internal reactions to circumstances, not necessarily what happens outside of them. So I found it interesting when I was working in Tasmania, there were people who were refugees from Sudan who had experienced all sorts of horrific circumstances. And they actually had a much better ability to deal with change than a lot of other people who had been living in the same place all their life, who, if something happened, they would become quite depressed or upset or anxious or whatever it might be. And it's interesting because the cultural values are quite different as well, because the people who came from Sudan or the people who I'd met had quite strong values in themselves and what community meant and what it meant to be a husband or a father, or they had different internal values. They weren't defined by, you know, a materialistic, comfortable life like some of the other people who struggled to deal with change in life.
Okay, well, we'll have a short music break. So the piece that we'll play is a track from the CD Chill with Sati, track 7. He is a French composer. I'm going to try my hardest to pronounce this properly. Troyes Nocience Lent. This is the song. So we'll be back to talk more about Gnostic anthropology with Trent. And you've been listening to a track on the Chill with Sati CD, track 7, Troyes Nocience Lent. Okay, so we're here with Trent McHugh Gnostic instructor from Auckland. Trent, could you talk a bit about the different traditions? I know there's a lot of them that have been available in the past that lead us back to that point of the absolute, our original point of departure.
Yeah, I think of all the different traditions, I mean, Master Samuel cites, for example, the Aztec and Mayan traditions as being cultures of the serpent. So, and in those cultures, it explains the stories such as the dissolution of the ego, the work of transmutation, awakening the fire. It explains the mysteries of the Gnostic Christ as well. So the work of sacrifice of oneself and liberation of the fire. And there are many different stories of Huehuetheotl, for example, being a god of fire who is one who dispenses the light, the fire of the absolute. So there's a strong reference of that, particularly within contemporary Gnosis, and also the Egyptian mysteries. So, for example, we have the mystery of the Sphinx, which explains the different elements. So we have the earth represented by the legs of the bull, the fire represented by the paws of the lion. We have the wings of the eagle representing the air and the head of the human being representing the water. So it explains how the different elements of nature combine to form the world of matter and how those forces actually govern not only the functioning of the globe and the elements in the world, but also the elementals within the person as well. More recently, we have, for example, the Gnostics of Europe who worked on the cathedrals. And in those cathedrals, there are many statues and engravings that detail different esoteric keys that for many people, they're not seen directly. They have to be understood symbolically. And throughout Europe as well, we have the different alchemical schools and traditions that have left the same keys. But the thing is, in order to understand those keys, I mean, there's a lot, especially when it comes to the cathedrals of Europe and the alchemical schools, there's a lot of research and ideas around the symbols and how they can be used. But unless you really understand the basics of the esoteric path and or really the fundamentals of the esoteric path, and the initiatic process is very hard to put those symbols into context. But even, for example, I was talking about Aboriginal Australia, the stories of the rainbow serpents, and we see Quetzalcoatl of South America, we see the serpents of Egypt, we see the Kundalini serpents through India. So we have the mysteries of the serpent defined in different cultures. So once we understand the principles of esotericism and once we understand the processes of the initiatic path, then we see all those cultures in a much richer way with much more meaning. And that's really a beautiful thing about the Gnostic work, because as we study, we meditate, we practice, we develop a living relationship with those symbols. And especially through things such as the study of the dreams, combined with meditation, the psychological work that we undertake day by day. So a person can come to the Gnostic studies and have a very strong culture in terms of perhaps they're from a Hindu family or perhaps they were raised Roman Catholic or whatever it might be. And they don't have to dismiss that heritage that they come from, but rather they see it in a much deeper way. So really, Gnostic anthropology adds to the already existing spiritual heritage that exists in the world. It doesn't take away from it or separate from it.
Sure. So you're speaking about Carl Jung and his archetypes. Are these what he's referring to, those common archetypes that we ourselves can understand through our dreams?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is as well, I mean, in relation to Jung, he understood towards the end of his life, his greatest pain was the fact that he couldn't actually find anybody to explain what he was experiencing. because by that stage she was attracting a lot of psychologists who were trying to understand things in a very psychological way. But he wrote in the last few weeks of his life that he was absolutely convinced of two things. One is that we have a soul, and the other thing is that God exists. And his experiences that he was having, he was explaining to people that they're not just symbolic, that they're actually living experiences that are working inside of him. Now, sometimes I think, well, if there was a Gnostic person who was with Jung at that time, they would have understood what he meant. They're not just symbols that we see, and then I think, oh, that's interesting. How might I interpret that? They're actually living processes that change us. In the same way that a person can talk to a person, have a conversation in the street physically, and that conversation or that experience of that person changes us in some way. So in the same way, when we have experiences with these archetypes internally, that process actually changes how we are and who we are in some way. So, and that's really a beautiful thing about Gnostic anthropology, is that it opens up the world's mythology and says there's an entire world of experience and an entire world of knowledge that's alive for us to participate in. It's not something that we just read in the book and then I put it back on the bookshelf, or I go to a special place on one day of the week and then a person tells me what somebody experienced thousands of years ago. They're actually things that we can engage with. They're experiences that we can relate to.
I'm wondering, just a question I thought of just now, why there are so many different traditions and ways of explaining what is essentially the same thing?
Yeah. It's when the first Gnostic groups formed through Egypt and through what's now Palestine, what used to be Palestine. There were so many different Gnostic groups, and they each had their own mythology. And it's basically a way of that process coming out and then using a material foundation to express itself. Sometimes I use the example of it's like an artist who has an experience inside themselves, and then they paint that experience on a canvas. And everybody can have an experience of happiness, but how they express that on the canvas is going to be unique to them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that the emotional experience of happiness is separate from or different to everybody else. It's just the expression that's different. Mm.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So we all have, as going back to that point of emanation, you know, things emanating, just in one sort of form, takes on many different emanations.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if a person from whatever tradition they're coming from appreciated that in themselves, then we could appreciate the diversity of other traditions and other religions and see that they actually strengthen one another, rather than seeing the separations because of one line in a book or whatever divisions we have. So it's actually a celebration of the process that's happening inside people, because we see that religion or that tradition is an expression of that, rather than saying, well, you didn't have the same dream that I had, so you're different. Therefore, I don't like you. I see you as being separate. You know, It's different religions and different traditions, in my view, are a celebration of a common world. They're not things that indicate difference or separation between people. They actually show what unites us, really, because Christ, the Buddha, and many others all speak of the same principles.
So. Yes, we all need to appreciate unity and diversity, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Okay, well, we're almost about out of time. Did you have any final things you wanted to say?
Yeah, I think if anybody's interested in pursuing Gnostic anthropology, it's something to go into with a very open mind, and we need to have an imagination and a heart that can appreciate the beauty of what we're experiencing when we look at different cultures. And it's also something that we need to dedicate time to in terms of practice. It's not an intellectual study. So I think that's one of the first things that we need to be clear on in ourself, before we begin to embark on those studies, because it is something that embraces our life. It's not a separate study from our life. So I think if we can appreciate that, then Gnostic anthropology will open up a whole world of possibilities for a person to enjoy for the rest of their life, really.
Okay, well, thank you so much for those words and for the inspiration that they bring. And for
thank
coming
you for your
on.
Time.
Yes. And yes, so that's the end of our program for today. You've been listening to the Gnostic radio program of Adelaide. Good afternoon.